The French Dispatch, out of 10, what are you giving it?
Out of 10, it feels like a 7.9 for me. That's upon first watch. So I'm putting a strong asterisk next to that.
I can't talk today. Remarkable, because for me it's an 8, and we will get into that in a little bit. But once again, you have been listening to Fresh Hop Cinema, maybe on KZFR 90.1 FM. The French Dispatch is in theaters now. If you get a chance to see it, you got thoughts of your own, find us on social media at Fresh Hop Cinema, or send an email to fhccast@gmail.com.
Or head over to our website, freshhopcinema.com, for film reviews, beer reviews, and podcast episodes dating all the way back to 2016. To our KZFR listeners, if you want to hear the rest of this conversation, which includes spoilers for The French Dispatch, a second beer, and our discussion of Marvel's Eternals, plus the ever unpredictable Hot and Bothered section, head over to your favorite podcast app and subscribe to us, Fresh Hop Cinema. To those of you already listening on the podcast app, we will be right back to talk spoilers in the Danger Zone.
Fresh Hop Cinema is made possible in part by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by The Handlebar, offering 28 taps of craft beer, German-inspired pub fare, and an outdoor patio on 20th Street in Chico next to Winco. They open every day at noon. The Handlebar, a specialty beer bar for the adventurer. Check out The Handlebar on Facebook or call 894-BEER for more information. And by Affordable Automotive, repairing and maintaining all makes of cars, trucks, and SUVs since 1996. Located at 2106 Park Avenue in Chico, Affordable Automotive has pickup and delivery service with financing available. Appointments at 892-1774 and at chicoautomotive.com. Affordable Automotive is also looking for technicians to join their team. Call Mike Button at 892-1774 for details. And hey, if you enjoyed Fresh Hop Cinema, you can now go to kzfr.org and tip this show.
You're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned. This is Ken Logan. Stay tuned for The Doctor's Inn. Okay, and The Doctor's Inn is a radio show where I, once a month, the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 in the evening, I do The Doctor's Inn. And what I like to cover are health and medical kind of issues that I think are important. I am happy to hear what you, the listener, would like me to cover on the show. And to communicate with me that fact, you could email me, and my email address is klogan.md@yahoo.com. All right. You really should know this, too, that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They are actually my opinions. And underwriting this show, let's talk about that. First of all, it's you, the generous contributors to KZFR. But also, it's Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and cultural newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. Yay. All right. So for today's show, First of all, I want to start with this. Words for the day. Words for the day. I have two words for the day. Compassion and respect. There you go. And that means compassion and respect for others, but also compassion and respect for yourself. Therefore, self-compassion and respect. I'm going to get back to that in a few minutes. However, right off the bat, I'm going to discuss two specific public health issues. One is the role that firearms or guns play relative to our public health. And the second one is the cost of prescription medications and that effect on our public health. I'll talk about those specific issues relative to their role in our public health. But first, and mainly, I want to talk again, I want to state the issues of firearms and their appropriate regulation and the issue of the cost of prescription medicines as indeed public health issues. Therefore, since they're public health issues, to remedy them, the two entities bring upon the public public health issues, and so the action on them would be needed by our public political representatives, that is, Congress, both the House and the Senate federally. They are our representatives that we elected and we pay to help us relative to problems such as public health and safety. And that would require action by Congress. And just a little aside here, sometimes I go off on little bitty tangents, but so I'm going to do one right now. Sorry. It appears to me that our elected officials too often actually function to protect corporations as opposed to helping we the people, the constituency. Upon putting this show together, I was wondering why that is. Why are people elected to represent me and my safety and the health of us all are more being more protective to corporations than they are to protecting me? I was wondering that. And then I get this thought of that came to my mind, and that is the word money. And I also remembered, and with respect to that fact, money and our representatives, I remembered something called Citizens United, and that name is very deceptive. Here's the layout, the summary of the Citizens United story off of Wikipedia, that is. It all came to a head in January 21st of 2010, Supreme Court decision. So, first of all, Citizens United, remember, deceptive term, is a conservative nonprofit and nonprofit, that's another deceptive term, organization. Goal, apparently, of that being to facilitate the funding for communication and media presentations to the public relative to influencing outcomes of our public elections. The Federal Elections Commission, a public agency, had essentially placed varying restrictions on organizations like corporations, trade unions, other associations relative to their allowed spending on communications to the public during the time 30 days before primary elections and 60 days before general elections. However, in a case sought by Citizens United, the Supreme Court on January 21st, 2010, ruled that the Federal Elections Commission essentially could not restrict organizations like corporations, trade unions, super PACs, or political action committees, from spending millions upon millions of dollars on promoting a political party or an individual political candidate, thereby opening the door for big money influence in politics in our elections. It was therefore legal for money to talk, I say, and essentially for big money, of course, to influence, therefore, the work done by our representatives. Our elected congressmen and women would, therefore, as you can imagine, be drawn or tempted to be beholden to those organizations that were partly or largely responsible for those representatives actually being in office and continuing to stay in their public office, which is very important, as we all see in our members of House of Representatives and in the Senate. I think that phenomenon created by the Citizens United is kind of the elephant in the room in politics these days. And that affects, therefore, these two public health issues that I'm talking about. Gun control, no action. And the cost of our prescription medications in this country, no action. Bummer. Get this. The pharmaceutical industry has more lobbyists in Washington, D.C. than any other industry. That's what I've been told. And if you're like me, you'd wonder why that is. Maybe they're trying to influence our representatives, you think? Maybe they're trying to protect their billions and billions in profits. And I'm going to specifically give you some billions figures later on in the show relative to COVID vaccine companies. I'm all for COVID vaccines. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely am. But the billions and billions is an issue I'm going to bring up later. And that lobbying seems to be, by the pharmaceutical industry, seems to be working for them. It certainly is not working for we the people, is it? Remember what I said earlier. Money talks. Money influences. And remember the Citizens United Supreme Court decision in 2010. Okay. So it's upon us, we the people, to hold our representatives' feet to the fire on these issues. Expose their greed and expose how they specifically protect their corporate influencers as opposed to protecting us, the constituents. Again, especially related to public issues, public health issues like appropriate gun control and helping fix the problem of massively overpriced prescription medications via the pharmaceutical industry in this country. I, as a physician, witness that every day in my patients, of course. There, I got that off my chest. Now, I'm going to talk about stress. Oh, and you think, oh, Dr. Logan, you sound stressed. Okay, that did bring some stress into me. I will admit that. So Lord knows there's enough going on in our world and in our individual lives to bring up stress in us. Stresses are here. And of course, stresses will always be present in our lives, right? Well, when it comes to looking at stress in our lives, some words come to my mind. And some of those words are understanding and compassion. Both compassion as it relates to others and also compassion as it relates to oneself. And relative to one's response to the feelings of stress in one's life, we can call that self-compassion and self-understanding. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that and then the what-to-do-ness. When I say the word understanding in this context and the understanding of yourself and of others, I'm thinking again in the context of understanding stress and the carrying of stress, which really stress, remember, is a normal thing. That is, it's absolutely normal reaction for us to have. I'm not saying it's a okay thing, but what I'm saying is indeed it's a normal reaction, a normal occurrence. And the reason I'm stating that fact is that I want us to know that we're not abnormal when we're feeling the stress. We're not abnormal. We're not weird. When we feel that stress, I'm saying we're human beings and that each of us are amazing entities, we human beings. I say it's helpful for us all to always remember that. We're amazing entities. I would like us all to sit with that thought right now. You as an individual are a unique, amazing, and beautiful entity, a human. Now, and remember, stress is a normal reaction. And understanding that it's normal, maybe once you understand that, then hopefully you could then sit back and you could take the next step to thoughtfully begin to look at yourself, ourselves, and realize again that those feelings of stress are normal, especially with the world around us. Then begin thoughtfully looking at ourselves relative to our next steps, what we indeed can and can't do relative to our particular situations, what we can do in our lives step by step, sometimes gently and sometimes not so gently, but thoughtfully. And remember, the word for the day is compassion, including on yourself. Compassion relative to yourself. And also, of course, compassion relative to others. Others who also, of course, may be feeling normal reactions to stress. So compassion and respect are key words. Now, what to do and thoughtful next steps. So here's what I think is important for us, each as individuals. After we realize that stress is normal, and we're going to thoughtfully decide what we can do in ourselves, think about this, self-care. Remembering the power that is present when you care for yourself and caring for others. Immediately, I, as a doctor, of course, think of this power of self-care in certain steps such as nutrition, emotional self-care, and regular body activity. I know those sound kind of simple and maybe almost a little silly, but I think we forget these things. We neglect these things. And remember the power of self-care. So I'm going to go into these a bit. Sorry. I'm a doctor. So nutrition. By nutrition, I mean eating wisely. And I use the word wisely when it comes to our eating because each of us are a bit different, and we all have what feels best for us as individuals relative to our eating. But when our lives get stressful or simply busy, we sometimes let our eating get unwise, right? Eat only irregularly, live on too much junk food, etc. My advice to all of us is for all of us to eat as we would advise others to eat. That is wiseness of eating. Remember it. And the basics of what I mean by wise eating includes regular meals, that is not skipping meals, and eating a balance of food types every day, avoiding junk food, and not overdoing certain foods such as sweets, other carbohydrates, or alcohol, not overdoing alcohol, of course. Eat a balance of food types every day. So balance is the key word here relative to food, I say. Then on to emotional self-care. And what I mean by that is, first of all, taking note of where you are emotionally, being open to exploring and feeling open to yourself, your emotional place each day, being okay to own how you feel. Of course, again, realize that stress can flare up some emotions, right? Flare up your emotional self. And again, remember, that's a normal reaction to stress, normal reaction to stress. Then, thoughtfully, possibly, approach what you might do in your life to address emotional flare. What steps might you take to help this? And the first thing that comes to my mind relative to helping yourself with emotional stress, besides realizing that it's normal, could be to share your feelings with someone else in your life, such as your partner, family members, loved ones, closest friends. Share with them. And, you know, they might also share with you then. I feel that's a beautiful first step. Share with them. Then, my feeling is that one could also, of course, seek out and utilize the expertise of others in your community who are there to help you. Don't remember self-respect and self-compassion. Don't hesitate to seek out and utilize the help of others to help guide you through the process of improvement in your pain and uncomfortableness of emotional stress. And, you know, people in the community could be like a counselor or a therapist, your healthcare provider, or if you belong to a religion, your pastor or other professional there. But I say it's important for yourself to not hesitate to seek them out. Seek out someone else to help you if and when you're in need. These professionals are there. That's what they do. Remember, self-respect, self-compassion. Reach out when you feel a need. Then, the next thing is adequate rest. Sometimes, of course, rest or sleep is challenging for us when we're in a situation of stress, including emotional stress. I understand that, of course. However, I'm advising that we all do our best along our way in life to do our best to not neglect our sleep and rest. That is, avoid pushing yourself in a way that limits your rest and sleep. Listen to your body, right? Listen to your body. Rest when your body is telling you to do so. Then finally, regular body activity. Again, that might sound silly. By the way, I don't tend to use the word exercise. I just feel the word exercise has some, I don't know, sometimes it has some uncomfortable connotations, and I use the word body activity, simple phenomenon. And to me that means anything where you're up and about and moving. With the best example of that that comes to my mind being walking. Now, it also could include things like jogging, playing tennis, even playing golf if you don't use a cart, playing other sports safely, and swimming, those kind of things. If you happen to be someone who has problems with getting up and about on your legs, then remember, arthritis or other problems. Remember, of course, that in sitting in a chair, wheelchair or regular chair, just doing regularly set, and I'm going to say the word regularly done in a minute. That's the important feature here is regularness of body activity, by the way, in my mind. And what if you can't get up and walk, taking time, schedule it in. It helps to schedule things sometimes. And that would be body activity such as the movement of arms and legs and using other gadgetry to strengthen arms and legs and stuff. Just the movement. But doing it regularly, taking time to do it, taking time out of the day to do it. And you'd say, whether you're up and walking or other activity or body activity if you're chair-bound, how much time, you might say, and how often, you might wonder. And I'd say, well, I don't know. We're all different. And we all have different medical situations and age and all that. So it's an individual thing. But I say it's important to have some kind of basic idea of where to start. And I say this. How about 20 minutes, 5 to 7 days per week is a place to start? Then you could expand that over time if you like, depending on your body and your abilities. However, in my opinion, this is important, in my opinion, and I've been thinking about this for years and for myself and for others, it's the regularness of the body activity that is most important. It's not so much what, but it's the regularness of it. Scheduled into your day as part of your life, just like other things are part of your life. Again, I think the regularness of doing the body activity is the key factor to remember and to strive for. If you have medical conditions that you wonder if you think you should discuss your body activity plans with your healthcare provider, do that. That's a good idea to start. So, therefore, self-care. Self-care is so important. Taking care of yourself. That's what I'm talking about here. Wiseness of eating. Being upfront and open with yourself relative to your emotional needs. and remembering self-respect and self-compassion on that. And regular body activity of some sort. Again, regularly done. Self-care. I think it's helpful for stress. I think it's helpful for emotional stress. I think it's helpful for your body. All those things. Just some ideas. Now, I'm going to proceed to something totally different. And wouldn't you know, it's gonna lead into this issue about this other elephant in the room thing, of course. And you know what that is? COVID virus. Sorry, but remember, please listen, because you know we all are tired of hearing about COVID. I know that, but the problem with COVID, well, there's many problems with COVID, but the Delta virus is so contagious, and so the Delta variant is so contagious compared to the original virus, and so nasty. And I'm going to give you some figures and stuff. Not that I want to worry you, but I just think it's important for us to see the severity of this thing. But anyway, first, human fetus cells and the issue there relative to vaccines. I'm going to talk about how it relates to vaccines production and specifically how it relates to the production of COVID vaccines, because it's controversial relative in some people relative to whether or not they want to use or obtain COVID vaccines. So some, for religious reasons, choose to not obtain vaccination of COVID or any other vaccination if that vaccine was developed or produced and then produced via the use of cells from any human fetus. This subject is complicated, but there's some details here relative to COVID vaccines that I want to share with you in a minute. First, cells originating from human fetuses are among the types of human cells that are used in study and possibly production of certain medical products, including certain but not all vaccines. Human fetus cells, when used in medical studies or medical production, product production, are from what are called fetal cell lines. That is, that human cells that we're talking about originated as cells from a fetus. Now, remember, fetus when a woman gets pregnant, you know, there's an ovary that produces an egg cell, a sperm cell, joins that egg cell. Then it becomes an embryo. It starts growing. Cells begin to multiply, an embryo. Well, the next step in development early on is called a fetus. So that's what fetus means. And fetuses that are the cells that were originated on these fetal cell lines came from aborted fetuses. Now, aborted means therapeutic abortions or miscarriages. What I don't know exactly is how the role that miscarried type fetuses play in all this. But something that you need to know is this term cell line, fetus cell line, means that the actual cells used in these medical or science studies or production of products are not the original cells from the fetus, but are rather ongoing cell cultures called fetal cell lines. And these cell cultures producing replicas of these original cells. That's what they are, replicas of these original cells. Those original fetus cells were obtained long ago, years ago. And these are cell lines. I'm not exactly sure the details of the origin of the religious disapproval in each person who disapproves. However, I suspect it has to do with the fact that the original fetal cells originated, that then went on to be these cell lines or cell cultures came from, some of them came from therapeutic abortions. Some religions adamantly are opposed to abortions, abortions of any category, I suspect. I'm not sure if these same religions would have disapproval of the use of human fetus cell lines if they did only occurred from or came from miscarriages. I really don't know the role miscarried fetuses cells play in this. But then we have to think about, well, what about the life-saving outcomes from the use of these fetal cell lines in medical products and vaccines? How they play a role, and do we feel that the good from those life-saving outcomes overpower the fact that they originally way back came from actual fetuses? I don't know. One has to think about that, and I'll tell you in a minute a couple large religious organizations who indeed feel they approve. I'm getting ahead of myself. They approve of the use of some of those cells if they are able to save lives on into the future. Okay, but first, here's some details relative to the human fetal cell lines involvement or non-involvement with respect to the current COVID vaccines. Apparently, Los Angeles County Public Health has been putting information together, and so some of this information came from them. Some vaccines, overall, different vaccines, have been developed using two human fetal cell lines or cell cultures. And remember, this is long lines of cultures from way back. Specifically, however, the Pfizer and Moderna messenger RNA vaccines were not developed or produced using these human fetal cell lines. I'm going to say that again. Pfizer and Moderna messenger RNA vaccines were not developed or produced via the use of human fetal cell lines. Therefore, some organizations like a religious-oriented abortion organization that is opposed to abortions called the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which I looked up, and boy, is that a can of worms. But nonetheless, they feel that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine for COVID are ethically uncontroversial. In other words, not a problem. And also, in the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, if that means anything to you, their Secretariat of Pro-Life Activities approves of the use of the vaccines, all the vaccines we use that are licensed in the United States, because of the good they do for saving lives and morbidity. As does the approval exist from the Southern Baptist Convention. So I think that's important for us to all know. So in my viewing of the religious exemption issue relative to the use of COVID vaccines, I say this: the subject is complicated. However, my advice for people who might be kind of on the fence with this and therefore on the fence relative to obtaining a COVID vaccine because of this issue, look at the information, including the fact that the messenger RNA has only limited use of the cell lines. And by the way, I forgot to say this, on the COVID and Moderna vaccines, no, they don't use fetal cell lines in the development of those vaccines or in the production of the vaccines, but they have used them to a degree in their testing of the efficacy in the beginning of the vaccine, apparently. So look at all that data. And look at the deaths and morbidity or disease or problems from the Delta variant virus that can be helped by these vaccines. And look at your community that you live in and make your own individual decision. Make your own decision use your own decision-making abilities. And don't you know that I understand the subject is complicated for all of us, actually. I thought that was important information to share with you all. Now, I want to jump into a little bit about some other factors relating to COVID. First of all, the pills for COVID treatment that are on the horizon. Maybe you know this already. I don't watch regular TV, you know. I don't have channels on my TV. So maybe you all have heard about all this some way, one way or another. But I want to point them out right now. There are two oral medications in the process of being evaluated for use in treating mild to moderate COVID infections. Both are yet to be approved, however, by the FDA for use anyway. One of the pills is made by Merck, you know, Merck pharmaceutical company, and that product is called Lagrevio. It's to be taken, when it's approved, it would be taken twice a day for 5 days at the very beginning of someone's COVID symptoms. And apparently the studies, at least Merck says, the studies have shown that it can reduce hospitalizations and death by approximately 50% in people who had one or more risk factors associated with poor COVID outcomes and who had COVID symptoms for 5 days or less. They found 50% decrease in hospitalizations and death. The other one of the pills being evaluated is made by Pfizer, another pharmaceutical company, of course, which also makes one of the messenger RNA vaccines for COVID. And that product is called, the brand name is called Paxlovid. It's also to be taken twice per day for 5 days. In their studies, according to Pfizer, it apparently has shown almost a 90%, so 89% reduction in hospitalization and death in non-hospitalized people who were at high risk for progressing to severe COVID. So it sounds to me that it's yet a bit early to know well how these medications are going to do overall. And I don't have, by the way, any information on side effects, nor do I have any information on cost of these. Speaking of money and cost, back to money. I do have, however, a couple of statistics that I heard from Democracy Now. Was it yesterday? No, I think it might have been yesterday, the 17th, on Democracy Now, on KZFR, by the way. When you look at the combined profit, and it must be gross profit, by Pfizer and Moderna companies combined. So if you look at Pfizer and Moderna, the gross profit that they're seeing currently, or having currently, and I don't know, you know, gross profit doesn't take into account the cost issues of that the company has. So it's the massive amount of money that whoop is coming to Moderna and Pfizer combined. Get this. It's hard to fathom this. $1,000 a second or $65,000 a minute. That's a lot of money. That equals, and this is combined, Pfizer and Moderna, profit of $93 million a day, which is $1 billion, I did the math, $1 billion every 10 days. $1 billion every 10 days. Coming in to Moderna and Pfizer combined for relative to the current vaccines for COVID that they have put out. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of profit. And then, if you're like me, you look at the vaccine availability around the world, and you say, in this country, but also around the world, for crying out loud, and if you're like me, you say something like this, what? That's disgusting. those two companies, if they are, if there are any human beings involved in those companies, need to share their vaccines throughout this earth, this planet, to all people. Money should not stop them. They are well above anything you could imagine relative to profit from this. They need to share with the world the vaccine, period. That's common sense and humanness. All right. Now, sorry about that disgusting part of my talk. Children, vaccinations for children and COVID vaccinations for children. I want you to know this. As you know, vaccinations, Pfizer anyway, for kids 5 to 11 years of age has been approved by the FDA. INLO, our local hospital, is doing COVID vaccinations for the kids 5 to 11 years of age on Thursdays at the Cohasset Road Prompt Care site. Thursdays at the Cohasset Road Prompt Care site, beginning the week after Thanksgiving. On the week of Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is on Thursday, which is this coming week, they're actually doing it on Tuesday. So this coming Tuesday, Cohasset Road Prompt Care is doing, INLO is doing vaccines for COVID for 5 to 11-year-olds. To make an appointment, and for then after the week of Thanksgiving, it will be every Thursday. And to get an appointment for your child, you would go to the same site. You can go to the same site on the internet where adults and all can go, and that is the MyTurn, myturn.ca.gov, myturn.ca.gov. Boosters for COVID. I say yes to obtaining COVID boosters. Remember, you can mix and match. If you started with the Johnson & Johnson, I advise you don't continue with that. Get your booster with a Pfizer or a Moderna. And it's currently available for all of us over the age of 65. I've had mine. And in those who are immune compromised, you know, I suspect those people already know that, but it's if they're on chemotherapy, they should get a booster for sure. And actually, it's part of their original. They're really a three-shot series is what's usually advised for those people. And immune system modulator, people on immune system modulators who have things like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, maybe lupus, and are on immune system modulator pills, they should continue with additional COVID vaccinations as well. I don't think the general public has been FDA approved for the booster, but it's going to happen soon. maybe it's already happened. So I'm pro booster. I got a booster. I got a booster last week, about a week ago, one in one arm and a flu shot in the other, and I did fine. I, as an individual, did fine. No side effects, actually. All right. I want to give some numbers about our local hospital and COVID. Over the past month, the number of people per day, inpatients, with COVID infections has ranged from 35 people in the hospital per day or down to 25 about a week ago. So we're improving a bit. And the number of people requiring ventilators or the tube to their lungs and then on a breathing machine over this past month has gone from 6 per day down to 1. So there's some improvement happening. I want to look closer at the deaths in Butte County relative to COVID. And the main fact here has to do with the unvaccinated. I could give you a bunch of figures, but let me just say that the problem is the unvaccinated. 80% of the people who go into the hospital with COVID are unvaccinated. It's even worse when you look at the deaths. maybe I should go into some of these details. 86% or almost 90% of the people who go into the hospital with COVID have to, who are unvaccinated, are, no, 80% of the people who go into the hospital with COVID and require intensive care unit treatment because of the severity of their COVID, 86% of those are unvaccinated. And relative to the people who need a ventilator in order to try to live, that's 90%. And of the deaths of the people who are on ventilators, 95% of them, 95%, almost 100%, are unvaccinated. So unvaccinated people are the ones being killed by this virus currently, generally, mostly. Speaking of age factor, let's look at the death rates. Here's the big one, though, in Butte County. 75 years of age or greater, so the most elderly, 75 years of age or greater in Butte County, so far through this whole COVID thing, 15% of that population has already died from COVID over the last year and a half. 15%. Now it's way down to a little under 6% for the age group 65 to 74. And for the age group 45 to 54, it's less than 1%, 0.7. And 35 to 44 years of age, it's 0.3 are now dead from COVID. So, and apparently no deaths in less than 35 years of age, as far as Butte County is concerned anyway. The main thing I wanted to say about that has to do with the issue of vaccination and how important it is to get vaccinated for COVID, especially in the elderly, all of us. Because remember, even the younger ones, including the kids, when you turn the virus loose in the community, that's when other people get infected. So it's a community issue as well. It's not just an individual situation or concern when we're talking about getting vaccinated. Yeah, you want to get vaccinated so your child or anybody else who is thinking about getting vaccinated, yes, individually you want to help yourself not get infected with COVID. But you also, the second and also important reason to get vaccinated is to help contain the spread of the virus in our community so that your grandmother or your grandfather are less likely to get infected or somebody else who's immune compromised and elderly or elderly. And the holidays are upon us. Remember, the holidays are here. So remember, COVID, and especially this, the fact that it's this nasty Delta variant COVID, it's a nasty virus, much, much more contagious than the original, much more contagious than the original. That's why we had a surge from it. That's why there's deaths from it, as we're seeing, because of the severity of it. It's a nasty one. The vaccine still helps it. It's not 100%, but as I already told you, the vast majority of people dying from COVID currently are unvaccinated. So, with the holidays coming up, especially for those who are elderly in your family, 75 years or older, please remember, please keep in mind that contact prevention advice is still present. Contact prevention advice means, I'm sorry, it means masking. It means avoiding large groupings of people. And this is the holidays. Avoiding large groupings of people. Do small get-togethers if you're going to do anything at all. Remember, smaller is better. Please remember those COVID figures that I told you earlier relative to deaths. Don't make the elderly ones in your family at risk for bad disease and or death. And it's a sign of your love for them and your respect for them, to not put them in and tempt them with visits and get-togethers in groups of your family. And remember, even though you and your family are vaccinated, remember some, as you know, I suspect, some of us who have been vaccinated are getting the this Delta variant disease. Of course, we're not getting it as bad, and we're not in the deaths generally, but we are. It can and does infect some of us who are vaccinated. Therefore, at your family get-together, somebody could have the virus and be spreading it to grandma or grandpa and not even know it. And even if grandma and grandpa are vaccinated, and really bad if they aren't vaccinated, you got to protect the elderly. I'm just saying. And that's another reason for the kids to get vaccinated. Grandma and grandpa having the kid on their lap, you know? Gosh. Oh, protect your elderly. Remember, there are things like phone calls that could be done repetitively, by the way, and Zoom function on computers. There, I got that off my chest. Hey, now what? Now what am I going to talk about? Well, I know. I got something else I want to talk about. And guess what? We're into the late fall and winter. So guess what else is around? Another virus. Influenza. Why is that important now? Well, it's always important. But, and by the way, influenza, no, it's not quite as infectious as the Delta virus COVID is. And no, it's generally not quite as severe a disease, generally, as the COVID can be. But the people in the United States, probably the world, who die from COVID, I'm sorry, from influenza each year are in two age groups. The deaths, which are around, you know, a little less than 50,000 a year, deaths in the United States from influenza. And first of all, by the way, who would want to put themselves at risk for getting both influenza and COVID at the same time at this time of the year? That would be horrible. And could it happen? Yeah. Especially if contact prevention is not being done. That's double trouble. Anyway, the death in the United States, you know, this 45,000 approximate yearly deaths from flu, except last year, because, you know, the contact prevention we were doing last year relative to COVID, it helped prevent much, much of the influenza. So we had a real low year last year. But now people thinking they're vaccinated and think, oh boy, now we can all get together again. Oops. Guess what we're going to see? We're going to see flu again. And remember, we're going to see the COVID flare up again in the holidays. And that means deaths and morbidity. And remember, I say the word morbidity with COVID, and remember long COVID. Remember, COVID isn't just a problem for the acute infection. Yeah, it affects the lungs and it kills people, of course. But it also affects, in some people, the heart and the brain. So long COVID can be persistent symptoms of lung disease for months to years to the rest of your life, potentially. Especially if it's on top of something like asthma or COPD or emphysema, something like that, or you're elderly. And then the other thing is there are heart conditions that can and do occur with COVID, right? We call it viral cardiomyopathy. In other words, it inflames. The problem with COVID is it's an inflamer of tissues, and that inflammation can cause damage to not only the lungs, but heart and brain. Heart can cause viral cardiomyopathy. In other words, where the heart, because of this inflammation, it can't pump well, and it enlarges, and then it poops out. Congestive heart failure. And then, I know this from a friend of mine who has this, otherwise healthy 54-year-old, it can lead to cardiac irregularities, dysrhythmias, or irregular heartbeats. And in this guy's case, this friend of mine's case, he had to have a pacemaker defibrillator or heart shocker thing put in his chest, implanted into his chest to keep him alive. Otherwise healthy guy before he got COVID. Bummer. And another friend had strokes from it. Now, she, in her 40s, otherwise healthy, but she ended up doing okay because she got to a hospital that dissolved the clots, and hopefully she'll be all right. But, wow, double trouble. Other problems that come up with COVID, too. Vaccinate. Contact prevention. Important. Back to influenza. 2 points. Depending on your age, if you think you're getting the influenza, remember it can be symptoms like COVID. So cough, fever, weakness, you know, tired out. That's COVID also symptoms. Therefore, if you get symptoms like that, you really need to be tested for COVID also. That's what I'm saying. And maybe tested for influenza. So if you get those symptoms, cough, fever, weakness, during this time of the year we're heading into, remember, don't just think, oh, it's probably the flu. Yeah, it might be, but also could be COVID. So, man, first of all, let your family and friends know you're sick in case you get worse. Inform your healthcare provider either by visit in person or by phone and see what they suggest, or at least talk to their office assistants and see what they suggest to do, such as testing, etc. And then get vaccinated against the flu. You gotta. The flu vaccine doesn't happen to be as effective as the COVID vaccines are for COVID prevention, but nonetheless, you got to do it, I say. The flu vaccine is only about 50% protective because of a variety of reasons that I don't have time to go into, but 50% effective. But 50% effective at protecting you from influenza is by getting the flu shot is better than 0% effective in when you don't get the shot. And yes, you can get both COVID and influenza vaccines the same day. I did it last week. And you could start your COVID vaccine now and you could get a flu shot in one arm and your COVID vaccine. If you're going to get your booster COVID, yeah, get your booster COVID in one arm and your flu shot in the other. It's doable and it's advised. Remember the holidays. Be safe. Be safe. Keep grandma and grandpa safe. Contact prevention. I'm going to have to stop now and do other things like talk to you about an underwriter. So that's the end of the part of my show. And next month, maybe you could listen again to my show. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters like you and by Digital Path, providing high-speed internet for your home or business. Digital Path offers flexible plans with expanded data and speeds to 75 megabytes per second. Details about Digital Path service can be obtained at 1-800-676-PATH, P-A-T-H, that is, 1-800-676-7284, and at digitalpath.net. I suppose you know also that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. If you were to want to listen to The Doctor's Inn again, ha, I think that'd be just great. And that's the third Thursday of every month at 6 to 7 in the evening. The next show up, please stay tuned, is Planetary Radio. And now let's listen to Steely Dan. Let's listen to Dr. Wu by Steely Dan.
Katie tried. I was halfway crucified. I was on the other side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piastre I could borrow.
We got Planetary Radio coming up. This is FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Planetary Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by KIXE, the North State local PBS TV station, Channel 9. KIXE presents a wide variety of programming for all ages, including Nova, Austin City Limits, Nature, and Sesame Street. To view the complete schedule, visit KIXE.org. All right, listeners, we've got Planetary Radio coming up, and then Face the Music. Let's go.